Shalom. We're on paragraph 18, Yudchet, in Ayah, Rav Kook's commentary on Masachet Shabbat, on the Agadot. And here we have a interesting Gemara, Lichora, not connected with anything, in the paragraph of Bame Madlikin, where we talk about the what oils to light for Shabbat. And we saw that the best is olive oil. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Kol ha-shmanim yafim l'dio, v'shemen zayit min ha-muvchar. Here, we're not talking about oil for lighting, which was the common use for oil, cooking, lighting. But we're talking about what oils are good for making dio, for making ink. And it says that you can use all oils to make ink, but olive oil is the best for this too.
Ink for what purpose?
For writing.
For, as in the Sifrei Torah, or as in sort of kasher?
Bichlal, you have to remember, in the time of Chazal, they didn't write books. There's all books which weren't in the Tanakh were considered Sfarim Chitzoniim, like Apocrypha. And the Torah Shebaal Peh was Baal Peh, was oral.
So wait, when he says Yafim, it's more of a technical advice as opposed to, it's not, it doesn't say Kshirim.
Right.
We're not talking about what's Kasher, what's...
Right, it's a technical
okay.
Advice. Okay. Should we talk about the process? Maybe we'll do that next time. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Yeah, Rav Kook explains as follows. Shemin... Mityachis ela chokhma umor hasechal. As we've seen several times in the last couple of paragraphs, that oil represents wisdom. And this is mentioned in the Kabbalah. I think we mentioned last time that kol ha'arotzelach kim yadrim, right, to face the south where the menorah was, if you want to be smart. The idea of light,
right
to be wise, it's also... the symbol of light, right? Like we said in the cartoons, when a person has an idea, the light bulb. Also, if you want to be wise, you learn. And the time to learn for most people during the day you work, so you learn at night. How do you learn at night? With oil.
Enlightened.
Enlightened. Also, Chazal talk about the difference between eating raw olives. There's a machloket that Yavetz and Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld talks about that, that it causes a shikha, it causes you to forget your learning, as opposed to olive oil, which is good for your memory. In other words, there's
raw,
a lot...
Raw olives, as opposed to pickled olives?
That's the machloket, that's how Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld explains it.
There's an old Yerushalmi minha going to eat olives in oil.
Right, well that's what, that's really what you should, the Mishnah Berurah suggests it. Okay, it's brought down halacha, not just an old wives' tale. Anyways, so the symbolism of what we're talking about, how to make oil, how to make ink for writing. Rav Kook says that if we're making the ink, the writing, out of oil, shemen mityaches el ha-chokhma u-ma'or ha-sechel, the wisdom which is being going to be written in that ink. Tachlit mitziyut hadio ba'olam. The goal of ink in the world, and he lo lichtov imo chokkei aven. The goal of ink is not to write down laws of stupidity. Lo divrei nevala v'deyot ra'ot amachshikim oro shel olam. Not to write down things which, instead of enlightening the world, they darken the world, right? The idea of dio is that it should be connected, ink should be connected with oil, wisdom. And as you could already take an educated guess, the best of all wisdoms is shemen zayit, that we've seen represents the Torah, okay? Olive oil. The idea of writing, when Rav Kook says, to put down into chokkei aven, to chisel into eternity, bad things. That's something that actually was related to what I answered to Gershon before, that people, it's not like today where it's basically a second revolution. There were, you could say, maybe even a third or fourth revolution in history when it used to be that people didn't know how to read and write. In Am Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, almost everybody knew how to read and write in all times. So we were always open to wisdom. But before they invented paper...
Before Shimon ben Shetach, I bet most people didn't know how to write.
Why?
There wasn't general education.
Yeah, but you learned from your parents. We were always the people of the book.
They were always on the Aristotle, though. They were abysmally ignorant.
Yeah, but to read Torah, to learn Torah, is something that was always accepted.
They heard people tell them stories.
Am Yisrael says in the books, Jewish tradition is that we always learn Torah. And Kol HaVashoneh Yadol HaTachtona, whoever wants to think otherwise has to prove it.
There was a minority of people that were Chachamim.
You could claim it, but you have to prove it. Chachamim, there are different levels of Chachamim. We're not talking about that everyone has to know Shas. That obviously most people didn't. But the fact that people knew to read and write, that's the most basic. Vishinantam Levanecha, that's Talmud Torah Kneged Kulam. Basic Judaism is that you have to teach the tradition to your sons, and that always was. In addition, there is an interesting diyun regarding Birchot HaTorah that we all know that when you read, when you learn, you're supposed to learn out loud. Ad kedei kach, and it's so important to learn out loud. Chazal don't not only say that it's good for your memory, and that it's one of the 48 ways of to acquire Torah, but the halacha is, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that if you just think in your head or read without saying it out loud with your words, you don't have to make Birchot HaTorah. In other words, all the real mitzvah of learning Torah is in a way that it can be taught to further generations. Now, the Shulchan Aruch asks, so they say, if you're reading out loud, obviously, then you make Birchot HaTorah. If the blessing on the Torah, if you're reading to yourself, or you're just thinking about Divrei Torah, you don't have to say Birchot HaTorah. As a matter of fact, you probably aren't allowed to say Birchot HaTorah. It's a bracha levatala. What about in the middle case? Middle case where you write down Divrei Torah. So the Biur Halacha brings Rabbi Akiva Eger, who explains why is the halacha that when you write Divrei Torah, you do have to say Birchot HaTorah. He explains that when you write, it's written down forever.
It's teaching.
You never know if your child will open up your books. Whenever I learn, I write to these notes on the side. Who knows, ever might have a grandson who wants to read and learn Grandpa Ari's Chidushim. Or you publish an article, or a student, right? But that's actually the halacha. That even if you're not learning out loud, if you write it down, then that is the essence of Torah. You can make Birchot HaTorah. Why? Because there is, writing puts an aspect of eternity to it. Okay? And that's what Rav Kook is saying. Now, we mentioned when they invented paper, that was a big turning point. When Goyim began to read and write, that was a big turning point. Many point at the Gutenberg Galaxy, which was a big bestseller in the 60s, that the printing press brought the reading and writing to the masses. But without a doubt, and Rav Kook in his time wrote a lot about the importance of Sifrut, of writing. And I think if Rav Kook were around today, he would definitely see the internet as another shift to a higher gear of the power of Sifrut. Just to read to you a couple of small things from Rav Kook regarding the importance of writing, yeah?
One could take it almost the other way. I mean, it seems to be the way Rav Kook is stressing here that the purpose of writing is not for Chokhei Aven, not for Divrei Nevelah. It seems to be saying, that's the way a lot of people are treating writing today. There's a lot of rubbish written in the newspapers and in all the books that are printed.
Right.
Only a little part of that is actually of value.
Right. But
what's the real purpose of
what Rav Kook, he's going to go on to say that Chokhmah, Mada, not just Torah, but all wisdom is good. In other words, in general, books are good. The problem is, you're right, obviously the rubbish is that much more problematic. And what he writes in many, many different places is that Rabbanim, the rabbis, have to realize that the new medium of today, a lot more than the spoken word, is writing. And today, with the internet and every article that you go, somebody told me, just last week, Shimon Rachman told me, that I was quoted in an Egyptian newspaper. And it depends which side you look at it. And I found myself on the where was it, on the Hezbollah website in English. And anyway, it's the power of word. You don't know. Actually, you work in with this. You, if you want to, mifarsen, you want to publicize something, you can get to anywhere. And Rav Kook is writing this about, he foresaw this already 80 years ago. Yeah?
But in Rav Kook's time, this wasn't new at all. The printing press, I mean, there was no new technology at the time of Rav Kook.
Oh, so what was new in the time of Rav Kook was Haskalah. Haskalah, the Enlightenment movement, is that the Jewish people adopted this medium of literature, writing up history. I'm sure you heard of Gretz and Dubnov and all the maskilim who were writing plays and a lot of api korsik, bikorot hamikra, Bible criticism, etc., etc.
The telegraph Rav Kook was invented not much before Rav Kook was born, and radio came into being during the years of Rav Kook's maturity.
Oh, so maybe you're saying that maybe this was before radio, maybe we don't appreciate how much the written word was that much more influential. Maybe radio took it down a little, but now with internet, it's definitely on the way up again. In other words, what Rav Kook is going to say here today, I think, is a lot stronger even than it was when he wrote this. He's writing about 100 years ago. This is an Igeret in letter 27. And he starts out very, very strongly. Hineni kotev lo mipnei sheyesh li koach lichtov. I am writing this letter not because I have strength to write, ela mipnei shekvar ein bi koach lidom, because I have no strength to be silent. I can't hold back any longer.
He's talking about this specific letter, or?
No, he's going to write about how we rabbis have to take the medium of the written word and begin writing, not to leave all of the writing to the apikorsim, to the anti-Torah people, but this is the medium of the future. Hamatzav shelanu kol kach ayom v'doker ad shelo yiten manoach lalev. Says our situation is so terrible that we have to take it to heart. Muchrachim ledaber ka'et dvarim davka amitzim. We have to call a spade, we have to say brave things. Davka chazakim ugdolim. What does he want to say? Giborei haruach ha'omdim lenegdenu bezroa chasufa b'sharvit shel esh nora. Those strong spirits who are standing against us with their bared arms, they rolled up their sleeves, and with the staff of fire, of terrible fire. In other words, they're writing terrible things against the Torah.
The pen is mightier than the sword.
Yeah, the pen is mightier than the sword. Ha'it kavash lo et ha'olam. That's interesting that he says exactly that. He says, the pen has conquered the world. Hu rode b'machshavot. The pen is what establishes thoughts. It molds the thoughts. Berigshei alev. It influences the emotion. V'gam b'ma'asim. And eventually it also influences the action. Right? Today, through advertisement, through newspapers, everyone says the tikshoret hashem, you know, the press is at blame, and they're the ones who choose what's the agenda. Just look now at the 40 years to the Yom Kippur War. A couple people decided that we're going to start talking about the Yom Kippur War, and the whole country decides to talk about the Yom Kippur War. And the same thing when it comes to Oslo or any agenda that the press wants to adopt, they're the ones who set the tone. So Rav Kook says, how can we forfeit the name of the game? Right? We're missing out. Hayalel adat shanu rishaim lachashot velo liknot lanu et hazayin hamoderni hazeh? He says it's unthinkable that we shall remain silent and not adopt for ourselves this modern weapon, the weapon of the word, of the pen. V'anachnu lama lo na'aseh lanu gam anu et? And he writes about the importance of, why don't we have religious authors? Now, in his famous Hartzaat, which is printed with Orot HaTorah, where he talks about writing new type of books, we're all familiar today with the Da'at Mikra, right? Did you get for your bar mitzvah? It's the modern commentary, which encompasses all the classic commentary, also the good Bible criticism, all compiled together. Rav Kook wrote that there's a need to do that. He wrote about the need for what's today called Encyclopedia Talmudit, to gather all of, to have an encyclopedia to help people learn Torah in an orderly fashion.
In other words, to deal with things topically as opposed to the free association or whatever you
right.
call it in the Gemara.
Right, by topics. The Rambam started it. I think Shmirat Shabbat Kilchita is an automatic outcome of the Encyclopedia Talmudit that Rav Zevin began. Anyway, as a matter of fact, there's Rav Yochai Rudik, who wrote his doctorate on Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav, and the name of the book which he published is called Yetzira, creativity. And Rav Kook said, there's no reason why rabbis don't write poetry and don't write novels, and obviously new types of Sfarim that even, just for example, when they printed Rav Kook's Tshuvot, they were very careful to print even his halachic responsa in regular, modern, square, otiot merubot, print Hebrew letters, that it shouldn't be written in Rashi letters. Right? In other words, this Hebrew is a modern language. We want readability. We want all of the Jews, religious, non-religious, to be able to learn. Just another short example or two. Rav Kook in Igeret Kuf Tzadi Aleph, that's 191, he is writing a letter to Chaim Nachman Bialik, the national poet, and who Rav Kook knew in Volozhin, almost definitely, simply because they were in Volozhin at the same time. And Rav Kook was asked by the Netziv to help all of the quote-unquote problematic students, those who were going in the direction of Haskalah or secular Zionism or socialism. And Rav Kook is welcoming Bialik to Israel as follows. Baruch ata bevoacha le'eretz chayim, oreach na'ala, mishorereinu hagadol ve'ahuv, mar Chaim Nachman Bialik, yivarecha Hashem mitzion. And he goes on to praise him. Shirana mishorer ahuv lanu, me'ata al yesha goy velokav. And he calls him a mishorer ha'le'umi, the national poet. He had a lot of hopes. Chaim Nachman Bialik learned in Volozhin, and he saw writing as an important modern medium. Another two sentences from other Igrot, just to show you that this is a common theme, a common motif in the writing of Rav Kook. On Igeret Tavkuf Tzari Dalid, that's 594. Again, he writes about the importance for religious people to learn how to write. Here he has a nice play on words. L'lamed b'nei Yehuda keset. Right, there's a pasuk. L'lamed b'nei Yehuda keset. And keset is the writer's, the scribe's, how he writes the pen. And he calls it haneshek hazmani, the modern weapon is the pen, etc., etc.
Would he say that non-verbal media such as film and video and things like that and graphics and so on would be part of the things that have to be used today? Or would that be a lowering of the verbalizing of Torah to a lower level?
My educated guess was, like with everything else, Rav Kook says you have to use it for the good, and everything is meant to be good, used for the good, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals to every generation the technology which is good for that generation and can and should be used for the good. On the other hand, anybody who has written articles knows that you can fit so much more ideas and depth in an article. You can put in every sentence, it has three or four ideas. In every footnote, you can, there's no comparison. When I've published more than 60 articles in different Torah journals, when I write, I go over every sentence at least, I would say at least 10 times, without exaggeration. And you think it out, and you go over it again, and you show it to people, and they edit it. And then just by adding one word or changing one word, you can add another half a thought, or sometimes even an entire thought. There's mamash no comparison. What that also means, not every common saying is 100%, but when it comes to emotion,
to read it, because you know, in the
that was my next sentence. Yeah. That today, very often, people don't know how to read. Part of the reason is because there's a lot of trash, and because everyone has their blog, and they just write, you know, whatever they shoot from the hip. So the written word is becoming cheap. And the reader doesn't read the way he used to know how to read. But like with everything else, it's a zigzag, right? And eventually people will rediscover. I think any intelligent reader can also differentiate between... I know in there's one journal that I wrote for that I've heard several times. I don't want to praise myself, just different people told me that... almost all the other articles that appear in that journal, you can tell they're writing as if they're speaking. That was the term. They shoot from the hip, they write it, maybe they have an editor go over it, but that's not the writing that we're talking about. That's
my daughter
not proper writing.
Editing, and she couldn't get work in it because nobody feels like they need to edit to their work.
That's interesting.
They don't feel the need, they don't feel the need for somebody else to look over their work before they publish it.
That's pretty sad. Okay.
It is very sad.
Okay, anyway, getting back to Piska Yudchet, Tachlit Mitziyut Hadio Ba'olam, the goal, why there is ink in the world, he lo lichtov imo chokkei aven, not to write bad things to be chiseled down forever. And by the way, maybe I'll add parenthetically, the Rambam, in one of his igrot, says that people have a tendency to, no, I think it's in Shmona Prakim, people think that everything that's written down in a book is true. And he says that just adds that much more responsibility for those who are writing and also for those who are reading. Because you have to read critically. Lo divrei nevala v'deyot ra'ot ha-machshikim oro shel olam. Right? This neshek, this modern weapon, is not meant to add darkness to the world, which it can very much. Ki im la'irat ha'olam b'chol chokhma u'mada. The written word is meant to spread wisdom and knowledge, all wisdom and all knowledge, mo'il, which will benefit liyishuv haruchani viyishuv hamdini yachad, which will benefit the spiritual world, the intellectual world, and the political world, and the social world, and make life a better place, and culture, and all of this is in the power of the pen. It's the pen that makes revolutions. I remember in Russia, one of the biggest chaps that we did when I was in the group that we started Bnei Akiva of Minsk. It was right after the fall of the Iron Curtain. And we got a school building with a kitchen, including electricity and water and everything, for I think one, maybe it was even two entire months, for free, without paying a penny, in exchange for a Xerox machine. Xerox machines were against the law in communism because that was a way that you could spread ideas that they didn't want to spread. And after the fall of the Iron Curtain, the Xerox machine was a super, that was, for them, was like the biggest, the newest invention. They were all going crazy over this. So we benefited from it. Yeah.
Rabbi Weinberger talks about the Xerox machine as being one of the revolutions in technology that saved Torah at a time when Torah was about to be forgotten. He says that, because it came right around the end of World War II is when they started becoming available, and that was right at the time when all the Torah in Europe was destroyed, and Torah was just starting in America, and there weren't nearly enough books, and all the printing presses were in Europe, and all the printing presses had been destroyed, and they hadn't been created in America yet, and the fact that all of a sudden there was this machine that you could all of a sudden, overnight, create 100 shasas from your shas, gave that generation that was about to forget Torah completely a chance to get
over. Well, it was Photo Wasp then, printing by Photo Wasp upset, but the same thing.
Okay. Alken. Kol hashmanim yafim l'dio. All of the oils are good for ink. Rav Kook is explaining that. All of the wisdom is wisdom, again, not trash. All wisdom is worth to be written down. It's good that there are books, and it's good that all wisdom should be written down. And that's how he explains that all of the oils are good for ink, for making ink. Yoreg gamken, you understand, Yoshua, the symbolism, right? That oil is symbolism of wisdom. Ink is the symbols writing down. And the idea that all of the oils, all of the wisdom, including biology and math and culture, and is worth putting into the ink. The wisdom, the oil, all the different types are worth putting into the ink. Okay? I'm going to read that. Yoreg gamken shiraui la'alot ala sefer bidyo kol davar chefetz shel chokhmat bina. And he goes out of his every aspect of thought. V'shiraui shiadyo yafitz shemina chokhma ba'olam. And that the ink will be the medium that will spread the oil, the wisdom, throughout the world. In other words, even though oil is just one part of the ink, it helps make the ink, and the ink is what's going to help make the oil, the wisdom. And maybe I'll just mention that in general, as we all know, life is made of free will. We've discussed this many times, that Rambam says the difference between man, and animals is that man has free will. Now, what Rav Kook does very often, and this is an example, is that he says that when something is really strong, it's not a question of using it for good or bad. It's a question of using it for super good or super bad. And that we know, right? The chokhmah of modern physics and radiation. You could use it to cure people from cancer, and you could use it to make an atomic bomb to kill 75,000 people. This is an idea. I don't remember if we spoke about it once. I'll just mention it. Rav Yisrael Hess has a beautiful, beautiful explanation of the Midrash, where it says, "Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv, Vayibi Otam Basadeh," etc. And Kain said to his brother, and when they were in the field, Kain got up and killed his brother. Now it doesn't say what he said. It doesn't say what they were fighting about. And Chazal give three explanations. Yeah, one explanation is, we spoke about it.
Yeah.
How long ago? Sounds familiar? Okay, so we'll do it anyway. Okay, one opinion is that they were discussing how to divide the world. That Cain and Hevel, they're two sons, 50% of mankind. When Adam passes away, I'll take 50% and you take 50%. And how do we divide it? One said, I'll take the things, the objects, and you take the real estate. And one said to the other, okay, well, fly, you know, pay me for the land that you're standing on. And his brother said, well, take off your clothes, because that belongs to me. And the symbolism there is clear that all B'nai Adam, right, these are the sons of man, fight a bit. Even if you have 50% of the world, you're not satisfied. The second explanation is that B'tchumi Beit HaMikdash Nivna, each one wanted the Beit HaMikdash to be built in their part, right? 50%. Who's going to have the Beit HaMikdash in their lot? And the third opinion is Al Chava Rishona Yumedainim, that they were arguing who would marry Chava after Adam passes away. There's another Girsan the Midrash, which says that Hevel was born with a twin sister, and Kayin said, well, I'm the oldest one, I get to take her, she's the only woman alive. And Hevel said, no, she's my roommate, and we're natural, and I should, and that's how, what they were fighting. Rav Yisrael Hess explains so beautifully that all of the wars in history can be divided into these three prototypes of what Cain and Hevel were fighting about in the first fight in history. All wars are either about money or borders,
property.
The second object of wars is religion, crusades, jihad. And the third is women.
Helen right? of Troy.
Helen of Troy, or in all books, in all times, there are always two men fighting over one woman. Sometimes it's with a jousting, sometimes it's with swords, sometimes it's with pistols in the Westerns, sometimes they box it out. Popeye and Bluto over olive oil, and talked about getting back to olive oil.
I didn't think she was that clever, but all right.
I never understood what they were fighting about either. But Bekitsur, these are the three types of wars. Now, ironically, and this is the chidush of Rav Yisrael Hess, it's not a coincidence that if a person wants to be a Catholic priest, these are davka the three oaths that he has to take: poverty, chastity, and obedience. Poverty recognizes the fact that money, property, is a problematic topic. So what do the Catholics do? Let's push it away. Let's run away. You're not allowed to work for a living. Chastity, women, also a problematic topic. Let's stay away. Obedience, because religion is a problematic topic. These are all loaded topics. And as soon as you start asking questions and getting into arguments, the church might come down. So that's why the church wants us to stay away from these loaded topics, because these are the heaviest topics in mankind. That's what mankind is always fighting about. What's Christianity's answer? Let's run away. Judaism takes the opposite approach. Judaism, Davka, takes these three topics and says, because they're super good, they're also super problematic. In other words, if something is super, that means that you could use it either for war and it could destroy the world, or it could build the world. And the same thing regarding power of the word, of the written word, whether in Sifrut or whether on the internet, that Rav Kook is talking about today. Maybe I'll add one last point on this. That just like, and we've seen many times with Rav Kook, just like the individual slowly but surely matures, so too mankind slowly and surely matures. Now, part of the maturing of an individual is learning to become more and more independent. Starting with the terrible twos, adolescence, different stages, people learn to independent. That's what growing up is. The same thing with mankind, where mankind, when mankind was primitive, people weren't given the responsibility of making decisions, especially if you were a slave, if you were in the lower class. There were a couple selected few who made all of the decisions. As mankind matured, democracy also came on the scene. And that, again, is what we're saying is the aliyah, the advancing from just choosing between good and bad to choosing between super good and super bad. And that's why as Jewish history evolves, Rabbi Yitz Greenberger has a very interesting take on the Holocaust, where he says that obviously when God revealed himself to Am Yisrael when we left the desert, a bunch of primitive slaves, he had to do supernatural miracles to introduce himself. We were all paganists, and he didn't hide himself too much in the desert. There were supernatural miracles left and right. The pillar of fire, the pillar of water, man, the slav, etc. Afterwards, HaKadosh Baruch Hu began to hide himself a little in Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu works through natural miracles. Afterwards, in the exile, exile is what's called Hester Panim, where the highest level of Hester Panim, obviously, was the Holocaust, where God, as if it were, hid himself, and everyone's asking, where was God in the Holocaust? And this is another level of maturing that mankind has to take responsibility. And the natural outcome of the Holocaust was that only 3 years later, the Jews who had yet to come to Israel, many decided, we can't wait anymore for Mashiach. We have to come back to the land, and we have to build an army, and we have to build a state, and we have to revive the language, and we have to take achrayut, we have to take responsibility and not wait for God. And that's exactly what God wants. Just like every parent wants a child to learn responsibility, and little by little, first day, you hold their hand on the way to Gan, second day, maybe a little less, you accompany them, third day you accompany them halfway, and little by little, we let our children and we encourage them to mature. So too, God... go in front of me. This is part of the idea of the super good or super bad that we're faced today. I'd say the internet is a lot more than the written word in the time of Rav Kook, simply because it can get everywhere. That's number one. Number two, the internet in terms of pornography, in terms of having super bad at the availability of two clicks in the privacy of any house for free, that is something that we never had before. So on the one hand, learning Torah is on a much higher level than it ever was because of the internet. Shiurim, you can download, you can learn, you can have daf yomi, you can also in terms of the level of learning, you can get to bikiyut, you can get to tshuvot that a person today has at his fingertips, bikiyut, that only one in a million used to have. Someone like Rav Avadia Yosef, obviously it's not the same thing, but you can have it at your fingertips. On the other hand, today, again, it's not a choice between good or bad, it's between super good and super bad. Like Chazal...
Fingertips and head are not the same thing.
Obviously, Sinai and Oker Harim are two different things, and both of them are very important. But once you have the knowledge at your disposal, it raises your thinking and your process and on all accounts.
But the,
anyway, we have to finish sorry. Up. Okay. Omnam tachlit kol ha-tchunoti bishvil ha-chochma ha-elohit, ora shel Torah. That even though all wisdom is good to use for ink, in other words, all of the oils are good for the ink, nevertheless, there's no comparison. Lahavdil ben Kodesh Lechol. Rav Kook also talks about Lavdil ben Kodesh Lekodesh, that even within the field of Kodesh, of holiness, there are different levels. But how much more so, even though Rav Kook is very, very much in favor of secular wisdom and knowledge, there's no comparison between that and the olive oil. Maybe I'll just mention Chazal on the at the end of Maaseh Bereishit, where it says, Vayar Elokim et kol asher asa, v'hineh tov ma'od. Chazal or Doresh, v'hineh tov is the Yetzer HaTov. Tov me'od is the Yetzer Hara. And Chazal asks, how could the Yetzer Hara be tov me'od? And they explain that the sex drive, the drive to get married and to have children, is one of the strongest drives that there is, which on the one hand, as it says in Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, it got David, the Chassid Sheba Chassidim, Shimshon, the strong of the strong, and Solomon, the wisest of the wise, they got all three of them off track. And all of them were sinned on the issue of Arayot, which means that it's super bad. Judaism says, no, we're not Catholics, we don't stay away, but anything that can be super bad can and should be used for super good. The same thing with property, the same thing with family life, and the same thing with wisdom, and the same thing with internet and the written word. I'm coming. Yeah.